Welcome to the Wise Money Show with Garwin and Leanne Lenander of Lenander Financial. Get your questions ready and send them to wisemoney@klbbradio.com. Questions about finances, long-term care, insurance, and everything that goes along with preparing for the next phase of your life. Gar and Leanne Lenander have the answer. Email your questions to wisemoney@klbbradio.com or visit them online at wisemoney-klbb.com. That's wisemoney-klbb.com. And now it's Wise Money on KLBB with Gar and Leanne Lenander of Lenander Financial Services.
Welcome to the Wise Money Show. This is Leanne and Garwin Lenander with a very, very special guest, one that we've had on several times before.
And we're lucky to get her back
again. Lucky to get her back again. She comes from way out of, well, she's from Edina, but it's a long ways away.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
But Chris is really delighted. We're really delighted to have you with us again.
Thank you.
And what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the many varieties of problems that people who are needing help, elderly, abuse, financial problems, and we're going to try to get some answers to people. And then we've got, if you've got some questions for her further, Chris, give your phone number now, and we'll give a couple more times if they need to write it down later.
The phone number at work is 952-925-4147.
And it's Chris Mazur.
Oh, yeah, that's me.
Did I not say that?
No, you didn't.
Okay, sorry, Chris.
That's okay.
I even wrote your name down so he wouldn't forget.
Well, I'm getting old, you know. Chris, let's talk about the VA. This is something that's totally different than what most people get involved in, is the Veterans Administration and their health program, because theirs is different than the normal run-of-the-mill people on the street, correct?
Right.
How is it different, basically? Let's get started with that.
So because our office works in the elder law arena, we have a special focus, or we try to limit our focus on VA benefits to those individuals who are 65 or older. And there's two different programs. There's a state program and there's a federal program. Do you want to talk about state programs?
Sure, go right. Just keep going.
Okay, the state veterans program is the state of Minnesota. The governor is responsible for the veterans homes in Minnesota, and they are in Minneapolis, Laverne, Fergus Falls, Silver Bay, and then there's a hospital in St. Cloud, along with a hospital here in Minneapolis.
I've been to the one in Minneapolis. I have high school classmates in the one in Minneapolis.
And so to qualify to go into the Minnesota Veterans Home at any one of these different homes, the veteran has to have 181 days of service. That's it. Doesn't have to be during wartime. It just has to be 181 days. And in addition to that, they have to have an other than dishonorable discharge. So it could be a medical discharge, an honorable discharge. But they would qualify then to go into the Minnesota Veterans Home. And here in Minneapolis, it's just been redone.
So it's beautiful.
It's very pretty.
Very nice, yes.
And if you were to pay privately for that going into the Veterans Home, it would be $8,700 a month. Okay, so everybody gasps when we talk about it in the office, but there are ways that you can repurpose your assets or move them in order to qualify. And one of the benefits that we have as that you have as veterans is that if, let's assume that the veteran needed to go into the veteran's home, he could or she transfer all of the assets that he or she owns to the spouse. And that transfer of assets to the spouse has to be done and completed before they go into the veteran's home. If that is done and completed, then only the income of the veteran will be used for it to offset that $8,700 a month. So there is no reimbursement component.
There's no look back.
There's no look back. Once the veteran dies, the state of Minnesota will not go after the veteran's spouse for reimbursement, or after the family, after the spouse has died. So it's really a benefit that goes both ways. So let's assume that the veteran is healthy, but the veteran's spouse is not. We can do the same thing, move everything to the veteran. The veteran's spouse can go into the veteran's home, and we have the same thing. All assets are exempt.
What are the steps that they have to go through?
Well, it depends on the assets that they have, because one of the things that complicates it is if the veteran or the person who's going into the veteran's home has an IRA, Well, we got problems because we have potential income tax penalties or tax that's due
they
as a result of the withdrawal.
They might have the required minimum distribution, so they have to take money out from
it. They have to take money out, but if they leave it in the veteran's name and the veteran goes into the veteran's home, it's all going to be used for care. So sometimes we'll sit and say, okay, you have to make a financial decision here. Let's say it's $150,000 in the IRA. If we move it, we have $75,000 or $150,000 that's going to be considered income in that year. So maybe you're going to pay 40% of that in tax, but at least you have the other 60% where you'd have nothing if you left it in the veteran's name.
There are more, a couple of ways to skin that cat then.
Yeah. So let's assume now that you only, let me go back to the wait list. I didn't talk about that. The veteran, as a male veteran, the wait list is usually in Minneapolis about a year. Although just this morning we had a couple of veterans come in for the families and the wait list has been shortened to 9 months. So you really kind of have to watch what that wait list is like. And the other issue is for women going into the Minnesota Veterans Home, the wait list is usually 3 years long.
Ooh.
So that's a long time to have to plan.
Women live longer.
Women live longer too. And what happens, at least what we did with my dad, was he wasn't ready. So we put him on the inactive wait list at the Minnesota Veterans Home and he just sat there. The name just sat on the inactive list. And then when he got sick, we moved him to the active list. And he starts at the bottom of the active list and then floats up to the top. If he says no when he gets to the top, he goes back to the bottom and he can float up one more time. If he says no a second time, he goes off the list for a year, and then he can go back on. So essentially, you have one choice the first time through, second choice after a year, the third choice is going to be the fourth year. And the Veterans Home is I think, has a good care. So we don't usually have people who go in there and then move. Now, let's assume we have only one veteran and the spouse has died. So the veteran or the spouse, one of the couple has died. And we still want to be able to qualify that person for veterans benefits. So if the veteran or the person going into the nursing home, whether it is the veteran or the spouse, wants to preserve assets, we have to transfer the assets to the children, but we don't have a day wait. We now have a year wait. So you have to kind of plan getting on the veterans home list and then what you're going to do to transfer assets. And generally, as an attorney, we always will talk about the fact that if we're going to transfer assets, it's not a pre-inheritance for the kids. It's really designed to augment the type of care that they can receive. They can receive other things that the kids can pay for then. If, however, the veteran goes in or the spouse goes into the nursing home within that 1 year period, all of the assets have to be returned and used for care. So you have to be careful with the timing here.
So what you're really saying is if you've got a single person, you better be planning this out.
You can't do it just overnight. You have to plan ahead.
Right. And sometimes when we have these large IRAs, we might want to plan over a period of 2 or 3 years so we don't take the hit all in 1 year on the IRA. So we can use the years to withdraw
a portion
of the IRA to be able to reduce the tax impact on what we're doing.
So first of all, you look at what the assets are and you know how you have to allocate them. Once you've done that, then you go through a couple steps before you get
right
into the home.
Right. And then we look at, I take it one step farther after that, because then we look at the kids who have the money and we start to educate those kids that they need to take care of their parents. Okay, so this is not an inheritance, and this is an obligation that you have as children. And yes, the derivative may actually be that you might have something, but you will have earned it by the time your parents have died because we expect you to care for them, to be there for them, to go to the conferences, and to make sure that they're getting good care where they're staying. So it's a quid pro quo, and I usually will tell clients, here's your choice. You can keep all of your funds and trust that the government will provide adequate care for you when the funds are gone, or you can transfer to the kids and hope that they will provide care. And I remember my dad saying, well, that's not an easy choice. You know, I'm thinking, thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
So, but really when you think about it, it's an emotional choice.
It's an emotional step.
Right.
Because you've spent all these years accumulating what you have, and to look at the kids and say, I know what you did in high school, and I know what you put up your nose in college, and I'm not so sure I trust you. You have to get over that hurdle. And that's a big issue. So sometimes when people are critically ill and we can't wait that year, we'll see if they'll accept going to Laverne or to Fergus Falls. And that can be difficult because the spouse that's in the community wants to see her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an unusual circumstance with people in the office. There were four families because the Minnesota Veterans Home had a wait list that was almost 2 years for men during a period. And these four people needed their husbands in because, you know, there's a 66% higher chance that the people that do the caregiving, the spouses in the community, are going to die before the sick person because of the stress. So we needed to place them. And by chance, they all placed their spouses in Laverne. And so then I asked them, well, would you consent to me talking to my clients about this, the four families? And they all said yes. So I got the families together and they started a carpool. So the spouses, the wives, would drive down there 3 days a week and drive back. And once when an opportunity came for one of the spouses' husbands to move to the Minnesota Veterans Home, she turned it down because they were having so much fun.
So fun. Mm-hmm.
Driving down there, being
talking,
together,
having lunch.
Yeah, and it was like a support group.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really neat. There's three of them still. One spouse has died, but they're still, this is like, we're going on the fourth or fifth year and they're driving down there all the time.
And one of my clients had a husband who ended up in, you said Fergus Falls.
Fergus,
in Fergus Falls, and he had the choice to come back here later, and he stayed in Fergus Falls. He wanted to stay there.
Yeah, the care is surprisingly good. Not surprising, I shouldn't say that. The care is good, and the state makes an effort to make sure that the veterans receive good care. And oftentimes when I have clients come into the office, they look at me and they say, the veterans home, you mean that place across the river from the Ford plant, the Ford car plant? And I say, yeah. And they say, well, isn't that falling down?
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, you read that in the paper. It's a dump.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not.
And the problem that people have is the perception from the outside because it's on the National Historic Register. So they can't mess with the outside part of the buildings, but they're messing with the inside.
Mm-hmm. And you've got somebody that you know
well,
there,
right,
too.
One of my high school classmates was in there, and he's very happy there.
Yeah. Yeah, and when the families, and the families have to be happy too.
Mm-hmm.
So I have not had, in the 33 years I've been practice, any client or family ever come back and say, I hate it there, we have to move them.
We have to get out.
Now, you talked about the assets being transferred and changed, but then the Veterans Association do have special steps that they themselves go through.
Right, right. So before we get there, I want to follow up with just one more thing. So let's assume the guy goes into the nursing home and his income is $3,000 a month. And the wife is at home and she was an at-home mom. And so her income is maybe $750 to $1,000 from Social Security and a small pension. And that's not enough for her to survive. What the Veterans Home will do, or the Veterans Regulations will do, is they will take that $3,000 of income, even though we've moved all the assets over, okay? They'll take that $3,000 of income from the veteran that's in the Veterans Home, and they'll allocate to her what she needs to keep going. And there are provisions where if she needs a new roof on the house, they can provide that or allocate more of the income to provide for that. It's a lot easier than the medical assistance requirements because it's based really upon need, not based upon a formula, which I think is really good.
It's really great, yeah.
And the second thing that I think is what veterans have earned and deserve is that no matter how long they are in the veterans home or who goes in, spouses, the state of Minnesota will never come back after the death of the spouses and require anything to be paid.
Never.
They don't require any payback.
There's no, a lot of people call it the clawback, but there is no requirement. This is a benefit that the veterans and their families earn because of the veterans' service, and I think it's good.
Now, this is the state.
This is the state. Okay. So let's flip over to the feds.
Okay.
Now,
okay?
That's a different ballgame.
And if you want to stay at home, The veterans, I keep calling it the Veterans Affairs or Veterans Administration, but they changed their name. It's called the Department of Veterans Affairs, but I forget to use that correct term. So
be politically correct.
I'll try to be. So there are veterans benefits that are available to individuals who have veterans must have spent at least 90 days of active duty. So this is different than the veterans home. Remember, the veterans home is 181 days.
Right.
The veterans benefits through the Department of Veterans Affairs for individuals who are aging is a 90-day period, and 1 day of those has to be during a period of wartime. So you don't have to have boots on the ground in Vietnam or Bosnia. You just have to be in the service during that period. And the service dates are interesting, at least now, I think, because we have a long period with the Iraq and Iran wars.
Right.
I'm just paging through here because sometimes I forget. I'm at a point where I'm old enough where I'm not seeing too many more World War II vets, but we still get them. And that is from December 7th, 1941, so Pearl Harbor Day, through December 31st, 1946. So the next one would be the Korean War, which is from June 27th, 1950 through January 31st, 1955. Then Vietnam, from February 28, 1961 to May 7, 1975, or those are for the people who served in Vietnam during that period, or for other people who are not in Vietnam, not boots on the ground, it's August 5, 1964 through May 7, 1975. Why they made that distinction, I don't know with Vietnam, but they did. And then the Persian Gulf, that is August 2, 1990, and it's still going on. So anybody that served during that period of time...
1 day.
90 days.
Yeah, wait.
1 day during the period of war can qualify for what the Department of Veterans Affairs calls the aid and attendance benefit. So you have to serve 90 days plus one day in that service arena. And then you have to have, again, anything that is other than a dishonorable discharge. So most people say, well, you mean my honorable discharge is okay. Yeah, but there's also, you know, medical discharges.
Right, and others, yes.
Other discharges. Then you have to be over age 65, and you're deemed, by the way, by the Department of Veterans Affairs to be disabled as soon as you are age 65. So I think that's really ironic, but I'm not going to go there.
Well, we would be disabled then, Leanne.
I guess.
And the claimant, the veteran's physician, has to declare that he is or she is in need of personal assistance from another individual or in need of a protective environment. So we're not dealing with the ADLs.
No ADLs, okay.
Okay, which is very interesting. So they have to have, now this is means tested, which means that you can't have a whole lot of money in order to qualify. And up until now, trying to search through the 800,000 pages of regulations with the Department of Veterans Affairs, we have been looking and trying to find out what is the amount, what's the golden amount that will allow someone to be able to qualify for these aid and attendance benefits, because this is cash, and I can't find it. And I think what happened is what developed over the course of administering the program is somebody said, well, I think maybe a couple. They can have 80,000, or a single person, they can have 50,000. So it was never put into statute. And so we didn't know how to work with this. So I always brought everybody down to 50,000 because I didn't know what they were going to do. So we said 50,000 plus the house, the household goods, and the car. And so the transfer penalty, if you're going to move assets, is 1 month. So if you move assets out, let's say we're going to do it to the kids, because if it's a couple, we have to. It's not the unlimited between the spouses. So we move $150,000 to the kids. When that clears the bank account, we can make the application. Here's the rub. In order to qualify for these benefits, your unreimbursed medical expenses have to exceed your income.
Ooh.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, it's easier if you're going into an assisted living because you got a $5,000 thing you get amount, and the doctor says you have to be there. So what we have to do is kind of figure out how we work this. And so a single veteran, the maximum the single veteran can receive is $1,788 or $21,466 a year, and that is tax-free. And that is cash in hand. So the veterans, the Department of Veterans Affairs is not going to say to you, you need to use veterans services, or you can go and get the services where you need them. A married veteran will receive $2,120 per month, and that would be $25,448 a year. So it is not chicken feed. It is quite a...
Yes.
I mean, it can bridge the gap here with individuals who need the care at home but really aren't cognitively at a point where assisted living or nursing home is appropriate yet.
They're right in the middle.
Uh-huh. And the surviving spouse. So if the veteran has died, the surviving spouse gets $1,149. So she is the one. I'm sorry I'm doing this, but because there are women veterans. But she is the one that would receive the least, and that's about $13,794 a year. Okay, if a veteran is married to a veteran, then the amount is $2,837 a month, or about $34,000 a year. It could be a second income.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really makes a difference. And once they're awarded the aid and attendance benefits, there are other things that they can get from the Veterans Department of Veterans Affairs. They can get sometimes obtain free medication, medical equipment, incontinence supplies, glasses, hearing aids, VA hospital and clinic admission, and it opens up a whole new world of services that the veterans can receive. The disadvantage to that is you have to make separate applications for each of those.
But it doesn't count against the income that they're getting.
Right, right, and that is a big thing. So one of the things that we do when we do our planning is to try and figure out, okay, if we're going to qualify, if this is a veteran, how do we plan so that we're starting down a highway, but we still have exit ramps? Because we don't know what's going to happen with this couple. And so are we going to plan for the Veterans Administration, State of Minnesota Veterans Home? But before we go to the veterans home, can we get some of these services in for 18 months or 2 years to keep the veterans safe at home along with the spouse? So then we do the transfer, the one-month transfer, make the application for veterans benefits, and the application for veterans benefits could take 6 to 8 months. But then they're retroactive. The benefits are retroactive, so you get a lump sum check. It's just kind of hard to manage when you're down to $50,000 and you're paying $5,000 a month for care. You kind of want the Veterans Department of Veterans Affairs to move a little quicker.
Hurry up, yes.
But you know, it's the government. So maybe we can get 18 months to 2 years of somebody still being able to maintain their independence at home. Or if we move them to an assisted living, it might cover the difference between what the care cost is and what their income is, so they could do maybe a little bit longer in the assisted living. And in the meantime, we're working on the year ineligibility period because we have moved assets out of spouses' names, and we put the person on the wait list at the Minnesota Veterans Home. So we might be able to buy 3 or 4 years before they need to be institutionalized, which is a great deal. And then if they need to go into an institution, we've got that plan already in place. And then in the event they hate it at the Minnesota Veterans Home, we have a 5-year look-back period for any transfers for medical assistance purposes to have them be able to go to a different nursing home that's not a VA state facility. So the plan is with exit ramps down the highway so that if anything happens, we haven't done anything that jeopardizes their ability to receive any one of these three types of benefits.
What I think you've been saying, Chris, here is that this is a planning situation that you need to start early on. Don't wait till Papa or Mama has the stroke. And now, oh my, what are we going to do? Is get people in, sit down, and do some planning. You may not be ready yet to receive care or need care, but you ought to have some thoughts put down and have a roadmap done.
That's thanks, Gar, because that's my pet peeve, is to have somebody come in when they're already sick, we have an issue about competence, and they can't sign papers.
I think so often people just don't know that all this stuff is available.
Well, and if you think about it, if you look at your assets, most of our assets are held in a 401k or an IRA and in our house. And those are held in a position where you can only get at, my husband can only get at my 401k when I die. Mm-hmm. Unless I have given him a power of attorney that will let him move stuff. And that's the same way with the house. It takes one person to buy, but two persons to sell. And if I'm incompetent, he can't do anything.
He can't do anything about it.
You brought up power of attorney. Chris, I want you to explain what the power of attorney for health care is, because I don't think a lot of people have it.
Well, and we've got two different ones. We've got the power of attorney for finances, and we've got the power of attorney for healthcare, and they are two different documents. So we call the power of attorney for healthcare now the healthcare directive, but you've got to be very careful you have both of those. And I know my dad was a banker for 42 years, so he always told me a power of attorney is a license to steal, and he's right. But if we do it right and we're careful about where that power of attorney sits and how it rests and who has authority to use it, it's a wonderful tool to keep you out of the court system. Because the other option is if I stroke out and my husband needs to get at my 401k, then he has to go into court, prove me incompetent before a judge, and we're paying thousands of dollars to get this taken care of. Even though we're both attorneys. And once I'm considered incompetent, Luther can't transfer assets. He has to spend those assets on my care. So we are out of luck if we don't have those powers of attorney.
And that's where they should be done with an attorney, to be done right also.
Please.
I like the way you put that. Please.
But
please.
She's right. Both of the women are right. It's got to be done that way to make sure that it's legal and does, because you're going to ask some questions before you allow this to be done.
Yep.
And this isn't something, here, sign here and we're all done with it. No.
Well, also, you appoint the person that you trust most as the power of attorney, and if you use the statutory form, that person is limited to gifting to themselves $14,000 a year. So now you're SOL also. So you need not only the statutory, the bill-paying power of attorney, but you need a common law power of attorney, which would expand the gifting and allow us to do this planning. Where we're going to situate assets, how do we make sure this family can care for each other? We need those documents.
This is part of the estate planning process anyway.
Big part of it. Chris, give your phone number, and we're going to give it one more time before we're done here.
Okay, 952-925-4147.
Chris, this is a very complicated, a very involved process. It should be done starting before there's a crisis, and then work way along as you said, a roadmap. This is what we want to do. You need to talk to the veteran. What do you want done with your money?
Right.
Where do we want this to go? How do you want to get there? And then you make the decisions.
There's a lot of things available for the veterans that I don't think, like I mentioned, they realize is out there.
And if we can plan, then they can have control. If you don't plan, the control is taken away from you.
And that's the difficult part for people to understand, that you're... If you don't plan, it's out of your hands. It's totally out of your hands. Mm-hmm. Somebody else is going to make those decisions.
So when people come in and talk to us and they say to us, oh, I just need a simple will, no, we back up. No,
wait.
Yeah, let's talk about what if you're a corn cob? What happens then? How do we take care of you if you're not dead?
Well, we want to thank you, Chris, for joining us today, because this is valuable information.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Be sure to give Chris or her office a call at 952-925-4147. And thank you for being with us this morning. And if you've got any questions, don't call Lynn Anders on planning for the veteran. Call Chris's office, because there are answers there. And it may be something you need to start early, but start it and get the process working. Thank you, Chris, for being with us this morning.
You're welcome.
On the Wise Money Show.
Experience counts, now more than ever. When it's time to trust your finances to someone else, experience counts. And Lenander Financial Services are financial professionals who specialize in assisting people just like you with personal finance, investments, retirements, insurance, and long-term care planning. Call Garwin and Leanne Lenander at 651-436-3997. That's 651-436-3997. Lenander Financial Advisory. Experience counts.
Thank you for joining us this morning for Wise Money with Garwin and Leanne Lenander of Lenander Financial. Join Gar and Leanne each Saturday morning at 11:45 for more of the Wise Money Show. Email your questions to Gar and Leanne, and the address is wisemoney@klbbradio.com. That's wisemoney@klbbradio.com. Or visit them online at wisemoney-klbb.com. That's wisemoney-klbb.com. Join us again next Saturday for the Wise Money Show with Gar and Leanne Lenander of Lenander Financial on Club 1220 KLBB.